This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Joining us from Johannesburg is South African journalist John Madison. He's directing the election coverage for the radio stations of the SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation. Until recently, the SABC was controlled by the government and often used as an instrument of apartheid. Madison is trying to teach South African journalists the basics of a free and fair press. He reported from South Africa for National Public Radio from 1986 to 91, so his work may be familiar to you. He previously wrote for the South African paper The Rand Daily Mail. Tomorrow, for the first time, black South Africans will be able to vote. The elections will span 3 days. I asked Madison about his game plan for the next 3 days.
We're running extra coverage. We're running extra shows during the day and so on. And we are covering these violent incidents more extensively than we might normally do to give people an idea of what's going on and also how it's being contained. Because there has been quite a lot of uncertainty about the voting process, and there have been so many changes. You know, Chief Buthelezi coming into the process last week was really a fantastic boost for the country and for the prospects of peace, but it was yet another in a long string of constant changes that there have been. The other thing about the coverage is, of course, that radio in South Africa is more important than television and print combined because of the size of our audiences and because we can go in 11 different languages, which television and print do not do. So it's quite a kind of logistical operation to make sure that all the stations are running all the time in all those languages with a decent level of quality of radio production. Radio stations in this country have been run, were really established as apartheid radio, with all the resources going to the white English and Afrikaans language stations. And the African language stations, some of which have huge audiences, several million each, are really run on a shoestring.
How much was the SABC, the South African Broadcasting Corporation, controlled by the government in the years under apartheid?
Oh, it was totally controlled. There were various stories that were true, where the president would call up the chief executive in the middle of the evening news and say he didn't like something, and they'd change it in the middle of the news. That's how bad it was. And the floor where I'm sitting now talking to you, there's an archive here. And we were looking for a record the other day, and we found it was a record of a song that said all the different ethnic groups in South Africa could come together and work well together. And someone in the archive had carefully scratched out that one track. So you could play the track before and the track after, but you couldn't play that track. That's the kind of censorship we had, yeah, in this building.
Was the press used to carry out apartheid?
Well, yes. I mean, well, the worst institution of all in the media was the one I'm in right now, the radio of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. You know, when I was growing up, at 20 past 7 every morning, there was a show called Current Affairs. And it was really the propaganda of the government. And they would start with something like, "Good morning. There are some critics of the government who are saying that the fact that they arrested so many people in the last few weeks is really wrong." And it would end by saying, "So the public should really be grateful that the reason they're sitting comfortably in their homes tonight is because of the government's firm action."
Wow. So you're in the position of trying to change the South African Broadcasting Corporation and make it an independent, fair journalistic organization. What are some of the basic journalistic concepts that you had to start teaching that weren't yet a part of broadcast journalism?
Well, the first training we conducted was just in what we call principles of democratic journalism that are accepted internationally. Just the notion that you have to make sure everyone has the right of reply, that you have to make sure that you don't ask the government what you can do, that you don't quote politicians all the time, because in the past they only quoted the government. Now, it was a tendency, ironic but really true, there was a tendency of people to start quoting Mandela and the ANC instead, with as much authority as they used to give the government. And so we're saying, no, no, that's not it. We don't, you know, and they were confused. They thought, well, the new regime obviously is just going to be ANC. And I must be ANC too, since I got into this position. And so we really had to be very stern and say, no, that's not the idea. If the ANC screw up, we'll report it aggressively. But one of the things we'll do aggressively is look at what ordinary people think about the politicians, not just the politicians pontificating for the public.
Has there been resistance to change?
I'll say. there's been a lot of resistance. I must say that it's not always clear whether it's resistance or other factors, because people have been isolated and they're really not kept up with journalism as it's practiced in the States or elsewhere. So it's not always clear what it is, but there's no doubt. I mean, I've had everything from moving into an office that had the telephone line removed, the computer removed, the tapes removed, the television, the radio removed, and I'm supposed to be the most important person in news and radio in the SABC.
Why was all that removed?
I don't know. Maybe it was an accident. Maybe it was to make my life more difficult. But I worked here for the first few weeks, struggling to get through on a telephone line, doing a lot of things just by walking around and going and seeing people and making sure they realized that I wasn't going to take no for an answer. Beyond that, there is a lot of resistance. There are people. You know, we've changed the way things work here, really, in terms of gender and race. And we sit in meetings where people I've brought in, women and black South Africans, who are not given special treatment, but they're given equal weight with the old guard. And so I wasn't sure of this at first, but I really do think it's true that there are people who are extremely uncomfortable just with that, just the fact that there are women and black South Africans whose opinions are being given equal weight. They really do have a lot of trouble with that.
Well, before you came in, was the entire staff white?
The day I walked in, the head of news here said that 80% of the news staff was white, most of them Afrikaners, Afrikaans speakers, and so 20% were black. And that you've got to understand in the context that 80% of our audience, or something like 80% of our audience, is black. Because we have these huge African language stations. Radio Zulu has 5 million listeners.
What has one of the high points been of covering the election so far?
The high point was we had the Mandela de Klerk debate. And I had a black woman I'd hired was on the air as one of the questioners, and another journalist from radio, and they were terrific, and I really enjoyed that. I must admit, I listened more carefully to the questions by my reporters than the answers, because we know that the outcome of this election is not a big mystery. It's pretty clear that Mandela and the ANC, all the polls show them doing extremely well, and there's nobody even vaguely able to touch them. But the rewarding thing has been bringing in reporters who've been excluded from the process in the past, and just seeing them go out. And we have a black woman who's gone out covering de Klerk. She's on his campaign plane with him, and she comes back with great sound. She's just been turned on to sound. She comes out of print, really good reporter, but she never had any experience with broadcasting, as most good reporters in South Africa have not had. And she just comes back with these wonderful bites of different people, ordinary people, black and so-called colored South Africans, going to de Klerk's campaign, listening to his meetings and shouting very raucous things in his favor and against him, and putting them into good sound pieces. That's been really exciting. The story of this campaign is not who's going to win. The story of this campaign is the fact that there's going to be an election, and the degree to which it's free and fair, and the degree to which the SABC itself, the broadcasters and the media, are able to establish a democratic climate in, what would have been regarded as such hostile soil.
You've brought a lot of black journalists to the South African Broadcasting Corporation. I think in the days of apartheid, black journalists understandably saw themselves as part of the liberation movement. Are you working now to try to get black journalists to see themselves as independent, as opposed to as being part of the movement?
Oh, very definitely. It's too early to say how we'll succeed, but what I'm trying to do, for what it's worth, is aggressively recruit, and we haven't done nearly enough, but aggressively recruit people from a very wide range of political backgrounds, because there's no way that you're going to get journalists in this country, white or black, who you can't figure out their politics. As in South Africa, among journalists, we all have a pretty good idea of who thinks what. So the trick, as far as I'm concerned, is to get a wide range. And I must say, among black journalists, there are some who've been very conservative, and that's why they've been in the SABC all these years. Some of them, not all, of course. And so what I've done is I've taken people from the ANC's Radio Freedom, because they have some of the best radio training in South Africa, as well as people from other political viewpoints, and bring them together and give them all the same message, that you check your politics at the door, and that what we want is balance and fairness, and you've got to apply it equally to someone you like and someone you don't.
How do you deal with certain Afrikaners who are very right-wing, very anti-black, very pro-apartheid, even though apartheid is over now?
Yeah, well, it's not just Afrikaners, of course, because, and in fact, there's an irony in the SABC among some of the white English speakers who regard themselves as more moral or liberal or whatever, and sometimes have a harder time adjusting to the new regime than some of the Afrikaners who were pro-government in the old days. So it's not uniform in that way. But you know what's very interesting? You can't predict in advance. Some people who have a bad record from the past have really adapted and really trying to get with the program. And what I've said is, look, I know this process is disruptive. I'll make it as undisruptive as possible, but the program's going to happen. The changes are going to happen, and you better accept that. And if you do, this is intended to be a moral process. It's not intended to be vindictive against people from the past. And in fact, I don't want to know about people's past in here among the whites. What I want is people on the program. I can't afford to worry about anything else right now anyway. Some people really do get on the program. Whether they believe it or not, I'm not really asking. But others just can't, and they come with every reason why everything I want to do is inappropriate for South Africa, or won't work, or the black people aren't good enough, and all that stuff. And you just have to be a bulldozer. You just have to keep driving through and saying, this is going to happen. I'll help you if you have any problems, but don't think for a second you can stop it. It's not going to stop.
Journalists have been banned from polling places during the election. Exit polls have been banned. And the Election Commission has warned that any reporter can be arrested for questioning a voter leaving a polling station. What's your opinion of that?
Well, I don't have a very strong opinion about it. I mean, it's designed because we're in a situation where there's violence. People admitting how they vote can be killed. So there is a rule that says reporters cannot ask a person how they voted. I don't find that a serious problem. I think one's got to be practical. A lot is being done to make sure that people can vote, and that people can vote how they want, and that they understand that their vote is secret. Excuse me. So I think the essence of trying to be democratic and establish democratic rules here is to tell people that their vote is their own property and it's their secret. And if journalists are told they can't ask that question, I don't mind that too much.
My guest is South African journalist John Madison. He's directing election coverage for the South African Broadcasting Corporation. He's the former South African correspondent for National Public Radio. Tomorrow night, he'll host a Frontline documentary on the South African elections on public television. We'll be back after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with South African journalist John Madison, who's directing election coverage for the South African Broadcast Corporation. He's speaking to us from Johannesburg. John, why did you become a journalist? Especially, you know, in a country where journalism was so controlled by the state, why did you want to go into that field?
To fight apartheid. I didn't think I could do it in any other way. I had lots of friends who did it in various other ways. I thought the way I could do it was through reporting. There was a very good paper in South Africa when I was leaving university called the Rand Daily Mail. And a lot of people in this country felt very, very strong emotionally about the Rand Daily Mail. In fact, I never found any repetition of that experience until I worked for NPR. And I think in some ways it's analogous. When I travel around the States, people who know my work from NPR, have a very fond, very deep feeling for NPR. And that's what we had for the Rand Daily Mail. And the thing about the Rand Daily Mail, especially after I'd got more experienced and perhaps a little less ambitious, I stopped thinking that, the Rand Daily Mail is going to change the country overnight in any way. But what I did know is that anybody who got the Rand Daily Mail with their breakfast, it was the biggest paper in the morning paper in the country, knew what was going on in the country. Nobody could say they did not know. And for me, that became more and more important, that the fact that there is a knowledge base in the society has a long-term effect. And I think the other effect of the Rand Daily Mail that really has applied is, although its views were and its reporting was rejected by the government, and there was all kinds of pressure over the years, and my phone was tapped all those years and that sort of thing. But ironically, when the government finally realized that it had to let Mandela out of jail, negotiated with him, and establish a new society, what did they have to draw on as ideas for what the society should be? Well, the views of the Rand Daily Mail at that point, I think, had a big impact because, the government started saying we need a Bill of Rights. The government had opposed a Bill of Rights all these years. The government started saying we need press freedom and all the things that would protect a group who are looking to the time when, from next week, when they're the minority, not the majority.
As a journalist working during apartheid, what did you start to feel you could and could not accomplish through good journalism?
Well, in all those years, the thing the government feared most was the truth, the facts. They did not fear opinion. There were over 100 laws, some of them still not removed from the statute books, but most of them are going. There were over 100 laws in my time as a journalist inhibiting what you could write, and they were all to do with facts. You couldn't report about conditions in the prisons except under certain circumstances. You couldn't report about police behavior except, the onus of proof on the reporter was very strong. So there were all those kind of restrictions that stopped one reporting things. But we had a lot of ways around it. For instance, Steve Biko, the black consciousness leader in the 70s, he was banned, and so we couldn't quote him. But I remember calling him, working out something, finding out from him what he really felt about something, and then saying, okay, who do I talk to get this on the air? So the right thing came through. It wasn't ideal, but there was no doubt in the reader's mind. So, we tricked the government, but it was perfectly legal.
John, are there a lot of families in South Africa now who are divided over the direction the country should be heading in?
Yeah, mine, for example.
What divisions are there in your family?
In my own case, my parents have always been very disapproving of my politics, and it has broken up families, including mine. My relationships with a lot of my family are never really recovered from those political battles that I had as a teenager.
I have a question for you about Nelson Mandela. He's such a truly amazing figure to have emerged from 27 years of prison and to be as just mentally astute and articulate and charismatic and everything as he is, just really, I think, staggers the mind. And he is such a heroic figure. It's hard to think of him as a politician. We think of politicians as being, excuse me, all the politicians who are listening now, but we think of politicians as being very self-serving and opportunistic and so on. And I'm wondering if there are any difficulties you have covering Nelson Mandela in the same way that you'd cover other people running for office because all that he's been through and because of all that he represents.
Well, yes, I think it is true in some cases, especially when you think about his wife, who's done some pretty awful things. But of course, you should not think of Mandela as a saint. He's very shrewd and he's very aware of the politics of what he's doing. And when he takes a stand and the way people deal with him, if you stand next to Mandela and watch people greet him, it's quite extraordinary. And this includes American senators and all kinds of other people. They lose their power of speech when they get in front of him. They're really so overawed, and kind of people who normally awe everybody else are pulling out their pens and asking for autographs. So it's obviously an extraordinary situation he's in. But it's not an accident for him that, you know, a lot of what happens. I mean, he thinks very tactically. He's fighting very hard. I don't know if you watched the debate between him and de Klerk. He'd been very nice to de Klerk all the time before and after. But in that debate, he decided to hit him very hard. And in this context, he hit him very hard. And it was all planned, I think. And then at a certain point towards the end, I'm sure you had pictures of this all over the show, he reached out his hand and took de Klerk's hand and said, you know, I'm proud to take your hand and go into the future. I mean, those were not accidental things. That wasn't the act of a saint. He controlled that debate by using the moral high ground. He knew very well he had the moral high ground. He used it. He took control of the situation. He attacked de Klerk very roughly. And then he would turn around and, you know, and hold out his hand. I mean, that was a very dramatic and one cannot say accidental use of his skills as a politician.
John, the voting begins tomorrow. What's your strategy for where you're going to vote, what time you're going to go to the polls?
You mean me?
Yeah, you personally.
For me personally, I'm going to have to slip in. I haven't had time to think about it. I'm going to have to slip away when everything's busy. The one question that people have to answer for themselves, of course, is whether that you have two votes. The national and the regional. And there is some, you know, because the question is, without telling you how I'm going to vote, but the question is, it's obvious the ANC is going to win. The question is, do you want them to win overwhelmingly or less than overwhelmingly? Because the key is, if they get 66% of the vote, then they will write the constitution alone. If they get less than that, they'll write it they'll have to combine with other parties to get their way in writing the constitution. That's the first issue. And then the second is, do you want to vote one way at the national level and another at a regional level? A lot of people are going to be watching to see whether the ANC is as strong in both place, you know, nationally and regionally. And one way people can give a sense of support for the ANC but control on their getting overwhelming power would be to vote different ways nationally and regionally.
Well, John, I know you have a busy day ahead of you, a busy few days ahead of you. Let me let you get back to work. Thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
John Madison is directing election coverage for the radio stations of the South African Broadcasting Corporation. Tomorrow night on the PBS Frontline series, he reports on Winnie Mandela's political comeback. Madison spoke with us from Johannesburg. Our thanks to Fresh Air's Joan Tui, who is working with the SABC election team, and thanks to our colleagues at NPR's Talk of the Nation, which is broadcasting from South Africa this week. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.